This is the PropTech VC Podcast. We give you unique insights into how innovative technologies are disrupting real estate. We interview top entrepreneurs, investors, and knowledgeable experts to share the inside scoop in this fast-moving industry. It's hosted by leading PropTech VC, Zane Jaffer. Let's dive into today's content.
If you want to get into real estate, is it a smart idea to start out as the middleman, right? Because it's a common path into real estate. Go get your real estate license and learn the trade that way. But you know, if you're becoming a computer scientist, I can see a long-term path there. If you're going to be stuck in this role where your word is going to be replaced by technology, what's your advice on that?
Yeah, so I mean, that's a question I get. I mean, I kid you not, every day, you know, whether it's in the form of an email, a text message, or, you know, hey, I'm so-and-so's friend, who's your cousin, who's your babysits your dog, you know, should I get a license if I want to be a real estate investor? I always tell them, listen, if your goal is to have $100 million worth of real estate, don't get a license. Because a lot of times it will oftentimes hinder you, it will get in your way. But if your goal is to make a living in real estate and you know, just be in the real estate space, I'd say getting a license isn't as bad. I think people, a lot of times when they first start out, especially, you know, in the real estate space or in the entrepreneurial spaces, you know, they get so lost in the details. You know, they get so lost in these little things that at the end of the day, doesn't really matter as much, you know? So I tell people all the time, like, listen, the choice is yours. You know, if you want to sell houses, if you want to be a commercial broker, you know, they make money. I'm not going to dispute that. If that's something you want to add to your arsenal and you want to have the MLS, then so be it. I would actually make the argument that if you're looking to get a license for the purpose of the MLS, then it's actually going to handicap you in the long run in terms of learning how to find good off-market deals. The best deals I've done, by the way, have never been found. They've been created. You know, in the form of off-market properties, I meet a seller, I genuinely ask questions and listen more, talk less, be decisive when it counts. And I genuinely was interested in solving their problem. And my father, my pastor, a lot of people have told me, and thankfully, that when you do business, always focus on the person, not the property. Invest in the people, not the property, and you'll do just fine, is what they told me. So, you know, I'd say it depends. It depends on what you want to do. I was not interested in getting a license. That did not excite me. I never believed that there's a right way to do something. I believe there's 1,000 different ways to get to the right place, and you just have to be the right person, and, you know, the right path doesn't matter as long as you're the right person. So that never excited me. I always say, listen, if getting a real estate license is going to make the big goal or make the big difference on whether or not you're going to achieve what you want to achieve, you got to get bigger dreams.
Right. And there's so many entry points into this industry, and there's always the excuse that I need money to play in real estate. And that's a myth. And I know you've talked about this before too, but I absolutely believe that too. If you want to get a license to understand real estate and figure out where you want to play, you know, fine. You know, there's an opportunity cost. If you don't have another option or another good idea, go for it. Right now, for example, I'm spending my own personal, I'm always learning, right? And, you know, I decided many choices I can do with my spare time. I'm learning to program, right? I'm learning machine learning in the real estate sector, because also I invest in real estate. I invest in startups that pitch me real estate. I kid you not, every startup that comes to me pitches this great AI vision, and it's not an area many people understand. So it would be helpful. I've run AI teams before, but it'll be more helpful if I can go much deeper. So that's what I'm doing. But you know, there's so many ways to get started. Another common area, and this relates to your new PropTech startup, some people think about entering real estate and owning the property management and doing that in-house and using that as a platform to build a business or learn. What's your philosophy on that as a way of getting started?
Yeah, I think it's phenomenal. I think if you want to start at the number one place for learning the game, it's managing properties. You learn very quickly whether or not you want to stay in the real estate space when you're a property manager. You know, in terms of in-house management, I always advise, you know, if you have a good amount of units, like a solid amount of units, maybe 50 or more, maybe consider getting a property manager. If this is something you want to do full time and be a full time landlord, then obviously, you know, manage it yourself because you have the time to do it. And, you know, there's nothing like that personal touch with your tenants. It makes your net operating income look more much more attractive. if you're looking to start a real estate fund and have a minimum of 500, 1,000 units under assets under management, I say it's almost a necessity for you to have your own in-house management. And for a multitude of reasons, if you're talking about downside, it lowers your liability. You have full control over what your process is like, what your delinquency process is like, what your eviction process is like, what your screening process is like. And not only that, but you get to match all those things that I just mentioned with the criteria that your investors are looking for. So everything is uniform. Everything is great. Everything's gravy. Let's talk about upside. The upside is tremendous because if you own $100 million worth of real estate and your net operating income is $10 million a year, I mean, that's very generous at a 10% cap. But, you know, I mean, if you're looking at, you know, $10 million a year in net operating income, 8% in management fees for $20 million in gross income, considering your expenses are 50%, that is a lot of money. That is a lot of money. And thus, it increases the valuation of your own portfolio. It increases the dividends that your investors get. And it just overall does a lot better for you and your team. Now, there's another trick that a lot of my buddies are using in the real estate fund space, especially if they're a smaller fund where they only hold about 10 or 20 million in assets. 10, 20 million assets, you're probably talking about between 100 to about 250 units. A lot of my buddies will start their own entity with a property management company. They'll have the same individuals owning the management company, and they'll have the management company charge at 30% of the gross income in management fees, so they could put themselves on a lower bracket for taxes. I had a buddy of mine who owned about 300 units locally, and he didn't have a real estate fund, but he held everything under one LLC, and he had a separate management company. And I looked at his numbers because I was actually buying one of his 36 unit buildings. So I'm looking at the P&L statement, and this isn't the Schedule E or anything like that, but you know, I'm looking at these numbers and I'm like, hey man, why do the net operating income is, you know, it's 20,000, but yet you do about 250, 260 in gross a year. Why is that? And he's like, well, that's because I charge $87,000 a year for property management. And I was like, why do you do that? He's like, well, if I count that as, if I have 87,000 being charged for my property management, the IRS sees that as an expense, you know? And it's because they got maintenance costs, I got this and all that. And it allows me to write off more, allows me to have a higher deductible in terms of what I can deduct. And it saves me money, so I don't have to take as much in cash flow. So I'm like, oh, wow. You know what I mean? That's a very increasingly creative way to do it. So, you know, I always say property management's a great place to start, not because you learn the grind, you're kind of in the trenches of learning the actual game itself, but you get to be very creative and you have tremendous amounts of upside in terms of setting up future operations and also helping minimize your costs and do better for your investors, which at the end of the day, that's the number one goal, you know, is to do right by your investors and treat them well.
Right. And Daniel, given that your new startup is focused heavily on property management, what are some of the problems you see and how does technology address the challenges of property management?
So this is something that I learned traveling. So I'm a young man. I'm only 26. You know, so that's why my partner is twice my age, because I have to cover the experience level that I'm missing. But you know, I did a lot of traveling when I was 23, 24 years old. I mean, I would literally be on 4 flights a week. I would have weeks where I'm in Minneapolis on Tuesday, I'm in Philadelphia on Wednesday, Chicago on Thursday, and then on Friday I fly to LA. So I would do a lot of traveling, and I would, you know, travel to train, to teach real estate investing. And I would be in front of hundreds and thousands of people. And I mean, I kid you not, every night I had somebody come to me with the problem. And they're like, Daniel, my problem is I'm a doctor. I'm too busy to manage my own properties, but I hired this property manager and they're taking all my cash flow. So every single night I'd have somebody come to me in some form of that problem. And then I quickly realized that a vast majority of real estate investors who own properties are very unsatisfied with the property management industry. And I made it a quest to find out why. You know, why is this huge problem existent? So it came to me in the form of, I had a friend who owned a 4-unit building, and she just bought it. She hired this property manager that was a mutual friend of ours. And the manager charged her $680 to change 3 locks. And she thought that was a little bogus. I did too. So I talked to my buddy who actually worked for this property manager, and he was an independent contractor who would give the property management company bids. And I said, hey, what did you charge by, you know, just out of curiosity, what was the bid you gave the property manager for changing those three locks? And I don't want just labor. Give me materials and labor. He said $150. And I said, you're meaning to tell me that the property management firm ate $530 for giving you a call and telling you that you had to go out to this property and change the locks? And I later find out that it wasn't just $680. The management firm also charged a $200 travel fee for driving 15 minutes to make sure that the job was done right, because the property was only 15, 20 minutes away from the property management office. And so I talked to my friend, and I talked to a lot of the people who came to me with this problem. And I quickly realized that a lot of management companies, they charge way more than just a typical 5 to 10% management fee. They typically also have their own maintenance company that they charge a huge spread on. They typically charge a buttload for leasing. They charge a lot for then they have other companies that they make spreads on. And I found that a lot of property, a lot of investors were not happy with the property management industry. So that's what inspired my brother and I, and this is about a year ago, to start a software that automates a lot of what can be done in property management. So we traveled a lot. We talked to a lot of big tech guys about, hey, what can we do to make this model efficient so that people could to manage their own properties, they just don't have to spend as much time having to deal with all the problems that really is repetitive. I mean, anybody that knows property management well knows that a very high majority of tasks in property management is very repetitive. So that's what inspired us to start that.
I think these problems exist because there is an agency issue where there is a misalignment of interest. The property managers are incentivized to drive up revenue, but they're not compensated on the cost or the NOI. Usually they take a cut of top line revenue.
Yeah.
Whereas the asset owner, frankly, doesn't care too much about the top line revenue. It's about the net operating income, because that is basically the function of your valuation, given that real estate is all about cap rates. Or do you think there's other problems as well?
Well, I think Zane, you bring up a very good point. You know, you brought up two points that are extremely important, right? Number one is that the managers, the middlemen, are not incentivized based on the performance of the portfolio. They're only incentivized on the gross income. They're not incentivized on how well that income gets curated. And they're not incentivized on how, I mean, you know, they could charge, you know, however much expense for all they can, they get paid the same amount. If anything, they get paid more if they charge more in expense. And you brought up another good point of where they are indeed the middleman. You know, not only is it a performance issue, but it's what we kind of alluded to moments ago where, you know, they really are as a service industry. So at the end of the day, you know, I'm looking to make that transition of changing the real estate tech space from a very service oriented industry into more of a product and more efficient model.
So let's dive into each of the categories within property management, right? Let's pick something like reporting, for example. What are the key elements? Where are the biggest opportunities to improve the process through technology?
So here's the interesting thing about that is typically when a property manager sends out a statement, they send out a monthly statement, and companies like AppFolio, Yardi, they have the same features. I guarantee you 90% of owners do not check the monthly statement. They hardly even notice it. They get an email, they're like, okay, great. The only time they notice it is when something goes wrong, right?
Right, exactly.
And unfortunately, that's the human nature. So in terms of reporting, you know, our software is virtually going to be doing the same thing, but it's more so the efficient aspect of the actual processes of property management. I don't see a whole lot of improvements being needed to make in the actual reporting aspects of things. But you know, what I think would be cool is something that we are working on is for each owner to have their own dashboard, for them to be able to control how their income gets divided, where the money goes, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, I don't think monthly reports are a huge change that needs to be made, maybe some tweaks, but the biggest issue again comes in these repetitive processes such as, you know, delinquencies, evictions, screenings, and you know, in the US.
How do you feel technology can address those challenges?
Yeah, so if you think about it, you know, one of the reasons why a property management firm has to hire help, because if you think about what AppFolio is, and I guess nothing bad against AppFolio, even though they did send me a cease and desist, but no harm, no foul, right? You know, I was told that they're threatened, and so be it. But you know, the issue with a lot of property management softwares is that it's very manual based. You still need an operator, is what I'm looking to say. What we're looking to do is we're looking to go from operations to oversight. You know, it's a lot like a machine. You know, you only want to step in when the machine is not working properly. You know, it's very similar to if you look at history and how industry changes, it's very similar to you go from a, you know, almost a service to a, then a product, and you go from product, manual product usage to, you know, then oversight, right? And then, you know, we're now getting to a point now where we're automating the automation, you know, as strange as that sounds. So, you know, I think a lot of sectors, these repetitive aspects such as delinquencies and whatnot, those things can be changed because they're more so repetitive. Like, you know, imagine a desk worker at a property management firm who literally their job all day is to schedule maintenance guys to go in certain units and make sure they're there at the right time and make sure the tenants are happy. I mean, I dare to ask anyone who could challenge me and say that can't be automated, or a tenant who could very well on their own probably do a much better job describing what the problem is directly to the maintenance person. That's probably a better picture than more so, you know, having somebody says, oh, well, here's what the tenant said. Well, I forgot what they said. Let me call them back. And then, okay, well, here's what they actually said. And then, oh, you can't be there at 8 a.m. Okay, well, why don't I call the tenant back now? So, it becomes a mirage of phone calls and difficulties. And, you know, this whole time the tenant's frustrated. They're like, well, you know, he hasn't come out in 5 days. Well, of course, because the individual, the office worker, is taking 5 days to schedule something that's actually rather simple, because at the end of the day, they're human beings. There's nothing wrong with that. So, you know, that's what we're primarily looking to do. It's not that much different than, you know, the software that you have today, but, you know, that little tweaks that we're making, the little things that we're adding on, that does make a world of difference.
Yeah, you know, management is one of those things where it can make or break your real estate project. At Bluefield, where I am part of a private equity fund, we work with we have about $1.5 billion worth of real estate in the portfolio, and it's essential we have the right managers. But here's the other challenge with real estate. I think you alluded to this, where people don't check their monthly reports and statements, because when things go well, you're hands off. When things don't go well, you dive in. And this is the same problem with venture capital, by the way. Too much time is spent on failing companies and not enough on your outstanding companies. There's opportunities to maximize efficiencies throughout the entire process, but it requires making that a priority, right? And that's not just boosting revenues, that's also keeping an eye on expenses and the net operating income. So I absolutely feel, as part of PropTech, the property management space is one that is a great, great opportunity for disruption. Whether that's a property management firm themselves bringing in technology, or whether that's a solution for smaller operators, or whether it's some kind of AI-based solution, you know, that plug and play. I mean, I don't know what the configuration will be, but this is a space to watch out for, and a space where there's too much going wrong. You know, and like I said, real estate's such a thing where it's been so easy to make money. Every fund over the last 5-6 years has posted tremendous returns. You know, you can win in spite of your incompetence in real estate generally. You know, as long as you buy it at the right price, you're good. So there hasn't been the incentive, there hasn't been the push to go out and do more. And I think it's great that folks like you are moving the industry forwards in that respect.
Yeah, and it really for me at least, you know, because between my brother and I, you know, I do run the real estate fund, the real estate fund that we do partner on together. You know, my primary partner lives down in Florida, where we're doing a bulk of our deals. It really kind of birthed out of the fact that I don't know if the expense ratio, I don't know if the income is sustainable for the next 2-3 years in the real estate space. You know, you mentioned something very beautiful, that every real estate fund and you know, real estate equity fund has posted tremendous results. They projected tremendous returns the last 5-6 years. The reason why I love being in the prop tech space is because I'm not sure about the certainty of the continuation of those returns. So if I could have a leg up, you know, using the technology software that I do have, I do see myself being able to shield a little bit better. Because if I can have something that makes it more efficient and it could lower my expenses, you know, I'm not as worried as the other guys if tenants stop paying rent, if income is not there anymore. So it's very interesting what could potentially happen in the real estate market. You know, I've been doing this series on my YouTube channel the last 8 to 9 weeks on the housing market and kind of what's going on. But I'd be very curious to hear your thoughts, you know, because you're obviously very well qualified to talk in the real estate sector you know, you own a lot of real estate. What are your thoughts on that, Zane?
Daniel, this segment is probably the most important segment ever when it comes to why PropTech. It's an existential challenge, right? Can we exist as real estate investors and survive and thrive without embracing technology? Because we're not sure if these results will be sustainable. I don't think you can get away anymore with buy, hold, ignore, trust a third party manager, and, you know, population growth and demographic growth and everything is going to be there in place, and boom, one day you'll sell it at a great multiple. No, I think you have to optimize, and I believe it's a zero-sum game here, in that if you don't, other people will, and they'll outbid you constantly on projects. Even if you bid the same level they bid, but they use technology to their advantage, you're not going to make the same returns they can make. And we live and die by squeezing as much efficiency as we can out of these real estate assets. So yes, the reason I'm in PropTech too is because I've got a lot of my net worth in real estate. A lot of it's passive. I'm in funds like Bridge, RXR, and Blackstone, and you name it, right? But I also own real estate myself, and I'm also with Bluefoot, where I've got a lot of money, and we're buying distressed real estate. And if a fund isn't thinking about how things are going to look 10, 20 years from now, and making moves now to embrace technology, either become a customer or a vendor, or build technology internally, there are not, I question whether they're going to meet their performance. I mean, it's absurd to me. We still write, we still underwrite projects with, you know, 5, 7, 10 year outlooks, and we'll trust the spreadsheet. But hello, what about the rest of it? Where is the technology? You're trusting the spreadsheet. You're hoping everything remains constant. Technology has taught you. Look around you today, right? I mean, COVID has happened, so, you know, technology is changing everything. But prior to COVID, you know, every industry has been disrupted, even the vehicles on the road. Who would think something as stagnant as, you know, the vehicle industry, right, would see disruption in the form of the Teslas and electric vehicles and you know, driverless vehicles, and also Uber, right, and peer-to-peer transport. So this is going to happen in the built environment. And I actually think COVID is the biggest theme now. COVID is forcing the adoption of technology. See, these trends were already happening, make no mistake. COVID has simply accelerated them, and it's forcing us to think, how does the world look now? And every part of real estate has been turned upside down. Every part has been impacted. And this is the time to, I also believe, this is somewhat of a controversial opinion, but if a prop tech startup isn't crushing it now, they probably never will crush it. This is the time when everyone wants to embrace technology and buy technology, because everything's been appended.
So yeah, no, I think you said it. I think you said it perfectly, you know, because I mean, even in times of certainty, especially, that's when people typically are most acceptive of creative and innovative ideas. So I think you're absolutely spot on that.
Absolutely.